In the last period, we finished the fourth trumpet. And at the end of the fourth trumpet, there is a verse that is a little different than the rest. And that verse says, "And I beheld and heard an angel flying through the midst of heaven, saying with a loud voice, 'Woe, woe, woe to the inhabitants of the earth by reason of the other voices of the trumpet of the three angels, which are yet to sound.'" So the woes are related to the trumpets. Do you see how this verse puts it? Woe, 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 by reason of the other three trumpets. And the next trumpets, which are yet to sound. So the woes are related to the trumpets. As we'll see a little more here, they actually encompass the fifth and the sixth trumpets. And then the seventh trumpet will be the last woe, although there is no verse saying this was the last woe, as there is on the other two. Okay, so these are delimiters, and the content within those delimiters belong to the specified trumpet. So, for example, Revelation 9:12 speaks about the first woe having passed. The first trumpet begins in Revelation 9:1. In verse 12, it says, the first woe is past. So that means the first trumpet has finished. And Revelation 9:13 begins the sixth trumpet. And Revelation 11:14 says that the second woe is past, and the third cometh quickly. So why does it say woe in addition to being a trumpet? Remember, the first four trumpets were judgments of God upon the state, right? The Roman power, or the Roman state. So, U.R. Smith said here, the Roman Empire declined as it arose by conquest. It arose by conquest and it declined by conquest. But the Saracens and the Turks were the instruments by which a false religion became the scourge of an apostate church. What was the false religion mentioned here? Mohammedanism, from Muhammad. And that became the scourge of an apostate church, because the church had apostatized. The Roman church had apostatized from the primitive faith. So this false religion, Mohammedanism, became the scourge of it. And it says, and hence, instead of the fifth and the sixth trumpets, like the former, being designated by that name alone, that means trumpet, they are called woes. So let's look at the fifth trumpet. Begins in Revelation 9:1 and ends in Revelation 9:12. It mentions a star that falls from heaven unto the earth, and he receives the key of the bottomless pit. It was commanded that they should not hurt the grass of the earth, neither any green thing, neither any tree, but only those men which have not the seal of God in their foreheads. They were like unto horses prepared unto battle. The sound of their wings was like the sound of chariots and many horses running to battle. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. So just think about it. What is being depicted here? It says wings, but the wings are symbols. It was like the sound of battle. The shapes of the locusts were like horses prepared to battle. So the symbol is the shape, as the locust. But the shape of it, John is giving the interpretation already, is like a horse prepared unto battle, right? So what happened during the fifth trumpet? That's what we will see here. So, Constantinople was besieged for the first time after the extinction of the Western Empire by Khosrows, the king of Persia. If you see here on the map, we have Constantinople here. Constantinople right here. And the greenish blue here, the darker green, is the Byzantine Empire. Okay? Now, that empire was what was left over from the Roman Empire. Remember, the Roman Empire was divided in three parts by Constantine. So that's where we get the verses that say a third part of men, and the third part of the sun was smitten, and the third part of them that had life in the sea died. Because it was over one of the portions of the empire that the scourge was falling, right? So, but after the other two parts fell, there was only one part left, so one third. And that was the Byzantine power. It would actually fall almost 1,000 years after the Western Empire fell. So it survived 1,000 years, right? And on the right side here, in orange, we see the Sassanid Empire, which is the Persian Empire. The Persian Empire and the Byzantine Empire were at war. And they fought. And they actually consumed each other because they were fighting so much. And somebody was left over to thrive, and that was Muhammad and his people, right? So it says, a star fell from heaven unto the earth, and to him was given the key of the bottomless pit. Let's read here. While the Persian monarch contemplated the wonders of his art and power, he received an epistle from an obscure citizen of Mecca, inviting him to acknowledge Muhammad as the apostle of God. He rejected the invitation and tore the epistle. It is thus exclaimed by the Arabian prophet, that God will tear the kingdom and reject the supplications of Khosrows. Placed on the verge of these two empires of the East, Muhammad observed with secret joy the progress of mutual destruction. Remember, the two empires were fighting together, right? So they're mutually destroying themselves. And Muhammad was just beholding and seeing, they will be done with and I will increase, right? And in the midst of Persian triumphs, he ventured to foretell that before many years should elapse, victory would again return to the banner of the Romans. At the time when this prediction is said to have been delivered, no prophecy could be more distant from its accomplishment, since the first 12 years of Heraclius announced the approaching dissolution of the empire. But Heraclius, although in the beginning he didn't do well, it seemed like the Byzantine Empire would disappear, he actually made a tremendous attack on the Persians. Since the days of Hannibal from Carthage, nobody had attempted such an enterprise against the enemy. It was such a move. And he went by the Black Sea, and he was able to come all the way to the heart of Persia. So he came from here and entered from in the back of the Persian defenses. So the Persians were called to defend their own country in the midst of it. And he was able to deliver Constantinople and the Byzantine Empire from the power of the Persian attacks. But it didn't last forever. They were still under the scourge. Okay, the verses continue and say they had power to hurt men 5 months, right? Their power was to hurt men 5 months. The question arises, what men were they to hurt 5 months? Undoubtedly, the same they were afterward to slay, see verse 15, the third part of men, or the third part of the Roman Empire, the Greek division of it, the Byzantine Empire, right? So, when were they to begin their work of torment? The 11th verse answers the question. They had a king over them. From the death of Muhammad until near the close of the 13th century, the Muhammadans were divided into various factions under several leaders with no general civil government extending over them all. So they were just without a king. They were just thriving, growing under many different leaders. But there was one point that there was a king over them from where we start counting. From the first attack that this king makes is when we start counting the 150 years. They had a king over them, right? So near the close of the 13th century, Ottoman founded a government which has since been known as the Ottoman government or empire, extending over all the principal Mohammedan tribes, consolidating them into one grand monarchy. Are you catching the point? After they had a king over them, there's something that starts counting the 150 years, which we will see here. So here's Ottoman. That's the man that founded the government of the Ottoman power. The character of the king. Let's see, what is the character of that king? Which is the angel of the bottomless pit. An angel signifies a messenger or minister, either good or bad, and not always a spiritual being. The angel of the bottomless pit, or chief minister of the religion, which came from thence when it was open. That religion is Mohammedanism, and the Sultan is the chief minister. The Sultan, or Grand Senior, as he is indifferently called, is also Supreme Caliph, or High Priest, uniting in his person the highest spiritual dignity with the supreme secular authority. His name in Hebrew is Abaddon, the destroyer. In Greek, Apollyon, one that exterminates or destroys. So as you can see, both in Greek and Hebrew, the character is destroying, right? That's the name of that angel. Having two different names in two languages, it is evident that the character, rather than the name of the power, is intended to be represented. If so, as expressed in both languages, he is a destroyer, and such has always been the character of the Ottoman government. Take a look here at the size of the Byzantine Empire. Okay? So here is it when they were fighting the Persians. This is back in the 7th century, I think. Yes, 7th century AD. Now, in the 11th and 12th century, look what happened to that huge empire. You see how Italy is part of it, you know, and Africa, Egypt, Palestine. But in here, they were reduced to Greece, Macedon, you know, some portion here of Europe, a little bit of Italy, the bottom part, and part of what is now Turkey. A little bit of here. But they lost everything else. And if you see also, what the Ottomans did is they were decreasing the size of the Byzantine Empire as they grew. So the calculation of some writers have gone upon the supposition that the period of 5 months, which is 150 days or years, right? So that the period should begin with the foundation of the Ottoman Empire. But this is evidently an error. For they were not only to have a king over them, but were to torment men 5 months. But the period of torment could not begin before the first attack of the tormentors, which was, as above stated, July 27, 1299. This is the paragraph that comes before that. The question is, when did Ottoman make his first attack on the Greek Empire? According to Gibbon, in the Decline and Fall of the Roman Empire, Ottoman first entered the territory of Nicomedia on the 27th day of July, 1299. If you see Nicomedia here, it's this area. It was the area that surrounded Constantinople, which was the capital of the empire. So Othman enters that part on a certain day, and Gibbon himself, the atheistical or unbeliever, right, the historian, he calls that date, I don't remember the specific words, but he says, it's a wonder that this day has been so well preserved in history. The exact date that Ottoman enters that territory. History is not usually like that. So why would God preserve that day so well? Because that was the basis to calculate when the 5 months began, and then to calculate when the sixth trumpet would have the 391 years and 15 days finished. Remember Josiah Litch that we were talking about? He used that date to calculate it. Okay, so just remember this because we'll look at it again. The calculation which follows, founded on this starting point, was made and published in a work entitled Christ's Second Coming by Josiah Litch in 1838. And their power was to hurt men 5 months. Thus far, their commission extended to torment by constant depredations, but not politically to kill them. They were tormenting the empire, but they couldn't finish it. They couldn't destroy it. The empire was still alive. 5 months, 30 days to a month, give us 150 days. And these days, being symbolic, signify 150 years. Commencing July 27, 1299, the 150 years reached to 1449. During that whole period, the Turks were engaged in an almost perpetual warfare with the Greek Empire, but yet without conquering it. So they could not conquer Constantinople. They tried, but Constantinople was well fortified. It had, I think it was a triple wall. Constantine really invested on that city because he made his capital. So he was trying to make it as strong as possible. And then it was, I suppose it was further strengthened by other rulers that came. So the Mohammedans could not conquer it. They seized upon and held several of the Greek provinces, but still Greek independence was maintained in Constantinople. But in 1449, the termination of the 150 years, a change came, the history of which will be found under the succeeding trumpet. And we read there that they were also commanded not to hurt any tree, any green thing, any grass, but only those men which had not the seal of God. If you read history, you will see that when the Mohammedans were being told to go and fight, it's quite amazing the way they were told to go. The person that is instructing them said, do not destroy the trees because you will eat of it. Do not stain your garments with the blood of women and children. And then he says, but you will find a certain group which has tonsures in their heads. Those you crush their head. Make sure to crush their head. And if you see those that have tonsures, you will know who he was talking about. So we come now to the sixth trumpet. There are some instructions here, some characteristics. It says, it begins in Revelation 9:13 and it ends in Revelation 11:14. How do we know it ends there? Because that's where it says, and the second woe is past, and the third woe cometh quickly, right? Remember, the woes are the delimiters of the fifth and sixth trumpets. Okay, so what are the characteristics? It says here, loose the four winds which are bound in the great river Euphrates. Loose the four angels which are bound in the great river Euphrates. The four angels were loosed, which were prepared for an hour, and a day, and a month, and a year, for to slay the third part of men. The third part of men killed by fire, and by the smoke, and by the brimstone, which issued out of their mouths. There was no repentance on the part of the people that saw it happening. The first woe was to continue from the rise of Mohammedanism until the end of the 5 months. Then the first woe was to end, and the second to begin. And when the sixth angel sounded, it was commanded to take off the restraints which had been imposed on the nation, by which they were restricted to the work of tormenting men. And their commission was enlarged so as to permit them to slay the third part of men. This command came from the four horns of the golden altar. So, who are the four angels? These were the four principal sultanates of which the Ottoman Empire was composed, located in the country watered by the great river Euphrates. These sultanates were situated at Aleppo, Iconium, Damascus, and Baghdad. Previously, they had been restrained, but God commanded and they were loosed. In the year 1449, John Palaeologus, the Greek emperor, died but left no children to inherit his throne, and Constantine, his brother, succeeded it. But he would not venture to ascend the throne without the consent of Amurath, the Turkish sultan. He therefore sent ambassadors to ask his consent and obtained it before he presumed to call himself sovereign. So here we have the brother of John Palaeologus, called Constantine Palaeologus, Constantine XI. He was the last emperor of the Greek Empire, of the Byzantine Empire. Let this historical fact be carefully examined in connection with the prediction given above. This was not a violent assault made on the Greeks by which their empire was overthrown and their independence taken away, but simply a voluntary surrender of that independence into the hands of the Turks. The authority and supremacy of the Turkish power was acknowledged when Constantine virtually said, "I cannot reign unless you permit." Do you see how the Byzantine Empire was basically given up? He voluntarily surrendered into the hands of somebody else. This will be important because that's how the Ottoman Empire will fall as well. It will be a voluntary surrender. When he did that to the Sultan, it was considered he submitted. So the sovereignty that the Byzantine Empire had was gone. He submitted to another power. The four angels were loosed for an hour, a day, a month, and a year to slay the third part of men. This period amounts to how much? 391 years and 15 days. You must remember this. During which Ottoman supremacy was to exist in Constantinople. Thus, a prophetic year is 360 prophetic days or years. A prophetic month, 30 prophetic days or literal years. One prophetic day is one literal year. In an hour, or the 24th part of a prophetic day, would be a 24th part of a literal year or 15 days. The whole amounting to 391 years and 15 days. So, as you can see here, this is a calculation. The first 150 years began in July 27, 1299. If you add that, if you count 150 years, you reach July 27, 1449. And if you add 391 years and 15 days to that day, you come to what day? August 11, 1840. Do you understand how Josiah Litch made the calculation?
Yes.
This is how it was. Okay, so let's go back to history. although the four angels were thus loosed by the voluntary submission of the Greeks, yet another doom awaited the seat of the empire. Amurath, the sultan, to whom the submission of Constantine the 13th, was made, and by whose permission he reigned in Constantinople, soon after died, and was succeeded in the empire in 1451 by Mohammed II, who set his heart on securing Constantinople as the seat of his empire. He accordingly made preparations for besieging the city and taking the city. The siege commenced on the 6th of April, 1453, and ended in the capture of the city and the death of the last of the Constantines on the 16th day of May following. And the eastern city of the Caesars became the seat of the Ottoman empires. The arms and mode of warfare which were used in the siege in which Constantinople was to be overthrown and held in subjection were, as we shall see, distinctly noticed by the Revelator. Do you remember that fire was coming out of the mouth of the horses and there was smoke and brimstone? Take a look at the size of the empire of Constantinople or the Byzantine Empire during the 1450s. AD 1450, look at that. How large is it? It's just this little piece here. It's basically just the area around Constantinople. And there's another small piece here and maybe a couple dots here. Okay, so when the Mohammedans were coming, they said, we're going to take the city and make it our capital. And here you see a depiction of how they were coming. Do you see something here? What is this? This is a cannon. Did you know this was the first major use of gunpowder in battle? And it was used with a large cannon, a tremendously large cannon. Do you remember the description that John made? What did he say? Brimstone, fire, smoke. And here we have the actual fulfillment of it. Constantinople was very strong. They knew they couldn't go through the walls. They had tried many times. So what did they do? They used gunpowder, right? And that was kind of like an unfair battle. Because who could withstand the cannons shooting? And they had several batteries shooting. And a gigantic one. This is a picture of one that was made, I think, in the next decade, in the 1460s, and it's still alive. People can still see it. So they took down the city, and the Bible says they had power to kill the third part of the empire. Remember, the empire was divided in three? This part was already fallen. It was already dead. Now the second part was killed in the sixth trumpet. That means the last surviving third of the empire was destroyed by the Turks. And our pioneer here, Josiah Litch, studying prophecy, studying history, came to exactly that conclusion. And it was so strong, so powerful, that it gave power to the Millerite message. Continuing here, so this supremacy of the Mohammedans over the Greeks was to continue, as already noticed, 391 years and 15 days. Commencing when the 150 years ended, July 27, 1449, the period would end in August 11, 1840. Judging from the manner of the commencement of the Ottoman supremacy, that it was by a voluntary acknowledgement on the part of the Greek emperor that he reigned only by permission of the Turkish sultan, we should naturally conclude that the fall or departure of the Ottoman independence would be brought about in the same way. So didn't he voluntarily surrender into the power of the Turkish sultan? Didn't the Byzantine emperor do that? So when the Ottoman power was to be broken, it was a voluntary surrender also. Right? At the end of the specified period, on the 11th of August, the Sultan, on the 11th of August, 1840, the Sultan would voluntarily surrender his independence into the hands of the Christian powers, just as he had 391 years and 15 days before received it from the hands of the Christian Emperor Constantine the 13th. Exactly that happened in August 11, 1840. As we mentioned before, Josiah Litch had predicted that 2 years before. And about 2 weeks before the fulfillment of it, he put it in the newspaper and he said, this will happen. People took that newspaper, even unbelievers, you know, infidels, took that newspaper and they would read and say, this is amazing. This is a man that dares something. He has courage. Let's see, if what he says comes to pass, then we will know that William Miller is correct in his interpretation. And when the thing happened on the very day specified, it gave a power to the Millerite message. And it went forward with greater power than it had before. So within the sixth trumpet, we have a little book. We have Revelation 10. Revelation 10 is contained within that sixth trumpet. And this will be the topic of our next study, because it relates so much to the birth of the Seventh-day Adventist Church. We will study this in more detail, but just remember, the trumpets actually serve to settle when the little book was opened. They serve to places in history and to show when to start. So people that are putting the trumpets all in the future or in some other time of history other than what the Millerites were saying, they're actually destroying the very basis of our movement, the foundation of our movement. And many of them don't know what they're doing. But we need to study this a lot more. If you can, take a look at what the Spirit of Prophecy says about the trumpets. Study that. And also what she says about the book of Uriah Smith, Daniel and the Revelation. And you will see the importance of it. And then we'll go forward with the seventh trumpet. Remember, the seventh trumpet starts in Revelation 11:15. And there's this verse at the end of Revelation 11:15. Which shows us what is going on in the seventh trumpet itself. It says, and the temple of God was open in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament, and there were lightnings and voices and thunderings and an earthquake and great hail. So the seventh trumpet begins in the disappointment in the month of October 1844. Can we read that from the Spirit of Prophecy itself? Look at that. That verse that we just read, Revelation 11:19, specifically says that the temple of God was open in heaven. When she quotes this verse, look at that in Great Controversy. She says, the temple of God was open in heaven, and there was seen in his temple the ark of his testament, Revelation 11:19. The ark of God's testament is in the Holy of Holies, the second apartment of the sanctuary. In the ministration of the earthly tabernacle, which served unto the example and shadow of heavenly things, this apartment was open only upon the great day of atonement for the cleansing of the sanctuary. Therefore, the announcement that the temple of God was open in heaven and the ark of his testament was seen points to the opening of the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary in 1844. As Christ entered there to perform the closing work of the atonement. Those who by faith followed their high priest as he entered upon his ministry in the most holy place beheld the ark of his testament. As they had studied the subject of the sanctuary, they had come to understand the Savior's change of ministration, and they saw that he was now officiating before the ark of God, pleading his blood in behalf of sinners. So what is she saying? She's saying this verse, Revelation 11:19, represents the opening or the inauguration of Christ's ministration in the most holy place of the heavenly sanctuary, we saw that this verse belongs to the seventh trumpet. So when did the seventh trumpet begin? When did the seventh trumpet begin? It has to be in the disappointment. October 22nd, 1844. That's the only day that Christ's ministry begun. And we already saw that that verse belongs to the seventh trumpet. So I recommend to you, please read this book. You can get it for free at lmiaudio.org. Read this book, study it, and it will be a blessing for you. Who do you believe? Inspiration or the scholars? I leave this question with you.